special success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand, divided we fall.
Little bit of unity. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. It's the show where we get people on the air from all around the world who are, basically, they enter into the important world of politics, discourse, protesting, thinking, talking, filmmaking, in order to influence this world in a way that makes it better, or at the very least, slightly less tyrannical and more fun. And today I had a great plan, and it seems to have fallen by the wayside. it's not my fault, I can assure you. But it can be salvaged, of course. I plan to have a conference discussion here today with Casper Leach of Time for Hemp and Peter Reynolds from the UK, who's in the Clear Cannabis Activism, and Dr. Green from the Dactory right here in New Zealand for a panel discussion about the war on drugs, specifically cannabis, sativa, marijuana, whatever it's called. But unfortunately, we have none of them, with the exception of the truly exceptional, fabulous, marvelous, and dactastic Dr. Green. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Nice to be here. I guess I can carry the show on my back. That's okay. Let's get into 2 hours of hard-hitting comment.
Indeed.
I'm kidding with you, Vinny. I'm kidding with you.
Yeah, well, I hope so, Doctor, because frankly, I think that your sense of humour at this point in time is a very important thing to keep intact indeed, because after all, it is one of the most serious times in your life, because you're facing a raft of charges, and you've already been convicted of these, and you're now just awaiting sentencing. Is that about right?
Yes, I'm not waiting for any more prosecutions. They're all over and done with now. I had a trial a few weeks ago, and the result of that was I was found not guilty of three charges. The judge dismissed three charges, but the jury convicted me of three charges. So those are what I'm awaiting sentence on.
What are those charges?
One charge of selling cannabis, one charge of possession of cannabis for supply, and the third charge was permitting premises to be used for the commission of a crime, namely the smoking of cannabis. So,
are any of those indictable charges, Doctor?
Well, we don't use that term in this country, but they are they're the equivalent of indictable charges, yes. They're not of the less serious type. They are of the most serious type. The judge has available to him a sentence of up to 8 years imprisonment for these convictions. So, I'm facing imprisonment in a couple of days.
Do you think that they may use this opportunity to send a message to the rest of the cannabis campaigning community? Don't stand up and talk about it, or we'll get you.
That's one possibility, but I really don't think that that's likely to happen. If anything, I'm hopeful that the reverse will happen. I'm hopeful that the judge will recognise that it is necessary for people like myself to be out there representing, and I'm hopeful that I will get a non-custodial sentence. I've just 10 minutes ago received a copy of the probation report that's been presented to the judge for sentencing purposes, and it makes quite good reading. So he's not recommending an imprisonment. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that the judge will see the light, and we're expecting a large number of people in support at the court. So hopefully that will eventuate, and we'll be able to demonstrate to the court that I have widespread support for this particular cause, and give me a non-custodial sentence. I hope that's what will happen. But it's beyond my control. So whatever happens is going to happen. I'm going to do my best before the judge to argue for a non-custodial sentence. But it's interesting, of course, that this particular prosecution came about as a direct result of one of our Sunday newspapers seeking a cheap front-page story. They came along, they had a look at the daiquiri because we're campaigning for law change. We of course, take every opportunity to speak to media whenever we can. And so the Sunday news reporter came along and had a look at the daiquiri, saw what we were all about, and then promptly rang the police and said, why are you leaving these people operating illegally? We're going to publish a story in a couple of days that says you are ignoring the law and letting these people get away with it. And, of course, the police didn't want that sort of publicity, so the day before the newspaper came out, we were busted. And it came out through the trial that that was the only reason that the police have ever been to our place, is because of this direct threat of repercussions by a reporter saying the police are not doing their job. Well, any police officer is going to respond to that by doing his job. So, yeah, well, it's a little evil.
The whole system itself, to me, whenever you get involved with it, the punishment that you receive seems to be far worse than the crime in many cases. You know, like even, for example, assault, getting 6 months in prison seems a bit strange for somebody just tapping you on the chin. But I don't know. Maybe that's the they talk about deterrent and how it works and whatever, but it clearly doesn't. Because even back in the 60s, 70s, when they had ridiculous sentences being handed out for simple possession of small quantities of marijuana, and yet the youth culture and the drug culture persisted and grew, and now at this point, the vast majority of young people from the age of, say, what was it, 15 to 25 or so, about 87% roughly, have used cannabis before. And, well, clearly their model isn't working. So it may be that you have actually triggered something here, Doctor, with your arrest and with the charges that are laid against you, that if the judge does show leniency in this, it would be landmark. If you did not wind up serving some form of incarceration, I would be very surprised and very delighted, because it would send ripples across the world.
Well, I'm with you on that, Vinny. The Crown, that's our prosecutor, has made a submission to the court and has not mentioned at all that I have anything to do with the law reform movement. What they've done is they've compared me with various gangs and, you know, sellers of cannabis for private profit in the past, and says this man, you know, the starting position is 4 years. So I actually think that's a good report. A good report because it actually is misrepresenting the position to the court. So, look, I'm hopeful that that the court will see the light and allow us to continue doing what we're doing. This is a very important time in the law reform movement, especially in this country. We have an election coming up in at the end of this year. We have the Rugby World Cup coming up in September, where we will be on the front page news around the world about the World Cup. So it's a good time to be campaigning very hard. So I hope like crazy that I'm not going to be incarcerated. You know, if we just look at one of these convictions, the conviction that I have for permitting premises to be used. I did point out to the jury that what I have done is in fact no different to the Speaker of our Houses of Parliament. The Speaker of our Houses of Parliament, last November when we led a tour, a protest march on Armistice Day, the 11th of November, we arrived at Parliament and more than 100 people in Parliament grounds were toking it up as part of their civil disobedience. And that evening we saw on the TV news film of what we were doing, and the reporter asked a police officer that was present, look, there's a lot of people smoking here. Why are there no arrests being carried out? And the police officer said, well, the Speaker of the House has said to us that if they stay behind the barriers and there's no violence, then there should be no arrests for the use of cannabis. And I will be pointing out to the judge in a few days' time that that constitutes permitting premises to be used. Our Speaker of the House actually has control of our Houses of Parliament. He is the legal occupier of those premises. And so for us to be permitted to use cannabis in his grounds is exactly the same as what I'm doing or have been doing at the daiquiri. So it'll be interesting to see the judge's reaction to that. Because if I'm sent to jail for permitting premises to be used, then I would have to seek a prosecution against the Speaker of our House. We wouldn't let that one go too easily, I can promise.
Well, you shouldn't either, because, well, as far as I see it, with the media as belligerently foolish as ours here in this country, and with a lack of mainstream financial support, for example, because let's face it, because cannabis is illegal, it stops all those big important people who use cannabis, you know, politicians who smoke and lawyers, doctors, police officers and things of that nature. They will never, in the main, stand up in support of this issue because of the fear of losing their jobs. So the decision basically rests with those who simply have the will and the determination to come up with an idea and make it work. And when I first became associated with the daiquiri myself, it was merely an old warehouse with greasy tools and wheels and dead cars and trailers and junk and dust and crap and muck everywhere, with a fabulous upstairs office where we had a nice set-up table with some coffee and some tea and our computers and everything where we could plan campaigns and make posters and things of that nature. And, of course, Dr. Green's fabulous bedroom.
Yes.
And today, when you walk in there, ladies and gentlemen, you have a front of the building painted up in green, yellow, and then another green stripe with the Dactory written in big red letters. There's signs on the door that say that it's open, and you go in, and there's a mural painted on both walls as you enter into the little reception area where there's a fairly non-intimidating security grate, I must say. A smiling cashier person who takes your membership fee or your visiting fee of $5 for that visit or $20 for the month. And then you walk inside and the entire world opens up to you. There's a gargantuan 50-something foot bus with legalized cannabis done in green and yellow stripe to your right. There's a Gallagher Spaceys machine right in front of you. There is a table where you can, on the display case, where you can get all forms of munchies. There is a drinks fridge with a whole bunch of sodas and whatnot that you can get. There is a bong shop. There is a papers shop. There is a place down the end of the Dactory where you can purchase, to my knowledge, exchange certain things and be merrily on your way, or most likely stay, because there's a nice sound system going, there's a good overhead screen projector, and there's couches everywhere that are now of fine quality, tables, ashtrays, and bongs that you can get and use and smoke, and you can do spots, you can play pool, you can play foosball, you can tick back to reading if you want in the library. It's just, with all the stereo equipment and records and DJs and all of this other stuff going on here, with all the plants hanging from the ceiling and real cannabis growing up in the mezzanine, It's basically an unbelievable feat that nobody worldwide would ever conceive of actually happening, let alone in a small little old country like New Zealand. But it does happen anyway, and it primarily is the reason why Dact is now facing all these terrible charges, frankly, because he helped to build something that was unprecedented in our modern times. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Dr. Green from the Dactory.org.nz, and we'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest today is Dr. Green from The Dactory, formerly known as Ken Morgan, made famous by the Saturday shopping campaign that he led. Basically, the story was, back in the day in New Zealand, there was no shopping on the weekends whatsoever. And there were plenty of traders and business people who really did want to, and a lot of shoppers who wanted to buy from them on the weekends as well. And Dr. Green, known as Ken Morgan at the time, led that campaign successfully and managed to allow us to open shops and get Saturday shopping there. In addition to that, his illustrious past included a... This is a great cheeky story because everybody around the world who doesn't like the oppressive nature of a government that doesn't follow any particular type of logical modus operandi would understand and chuckle at. Back in New Zealand, we had no casinos of any kind. You know, you couldn't do any gambling, and so Dr. Green got a boat, put a casino on it, and sailed it out into international waters with New Zealanders on it so they could gamble legally. The Casino Royale. But unfortunately, he got set up, as you do when you try to pull off something, and the project was otherwise unsuccessful. However, directly after, casinos started opening up in New Zealand.
Yep. We have had an interesting life, Vinny, I have to say. But this is probably the most important project that I've ever been involved with in my life. The idea that people can be locked in a jail cell for having a toke on a joint is obscene. So... I have to say that back at the time in the past when I was doing these other things, the Saturday trading campaign and the opening of New Zealand's first casino, I have to say that at that time I was a prohibitionist. I thought anybody that had anything to do with cannabis was an evil, nasty, and if you were going to sell drugs to my kids, I'd take you out the back and shoot you. Of course, that changed dramatically when I was 40 years of age and had my first toke on a joint. I had a smoke with my adult son. He offered me a smoke. I decided that I would see what it was that young people found attractive about smoking cannabis. He was 21 years old. I had a toke with him, and it was a most pleasant experience. And I woke up the next morning, and I was no longer a prohibitionist. I wasn't quite sure what I was, but I no longer thought that it was an evil drug or that consuming cannabis was a bad thing. Mostly, I guess, because I loved my son and I didn't see him as a criminal. So progressively over the last 20 years, I've become more involved in what is clearly seen as a human rights issue around the world. So I have to say that. We're as close to legalizing around the world as we've ever been. The campaign is definitely hotting up. So wherever you are around the world, now's a very good time to come out and become involved in this campaign to change this iniquitous law.
Yeah. Hey, look at it this way. There's a massive boulder. It's cancerous. It's horrible. And it's extremely heavy. And there's a few people that are holding it at bay, and it's teeter-tottering just on the edge. And if somebody would just come in and then lend a hand or two, they'd be able to push it over the edge and be rid of it forever. Now's the time to strike.
People power, Benny. It takes people power. In changing something of this nature after we've had generations of misinformation and, in many cases, downright lies of our media around the world.
Are you there, Doctor? Seem to be
losing the status quo. So the more people that come out and add their voice and lend support to this cause, the better. Because it is only through our politicians seeing this widespread support in their communities that's going to move them from this prohibitionist state of mind that they continue to have. Somehow they think that the successes they've been getting through the last 40 years of prohibition somehow will get better if we keep doing more of the same. And, of course, that is the definition of insanity. So now's a good time for everybody to come out.
Yeah, well, when you talk about the law reform issue and your personal story there of the reason why you suddenly got a little bit over the war on cannabis, personally being a prohibitionist to being a sort of somebody who was, I think it might have been a breakthrough of compassion, because you realise quite early on that it's really inconsiderate quite evil to be discriminating against people in such an aggressive manner when ultimately they haven't done anything to you at all. Now, speaking of people who haven't done anything to you, I'd like to introduce another very special guest to this call for a panel discussion, as was the original inception. His name is Casper Leach from Time for Hemp, right here on American Freedom Radio. Casper, welcome to the program, and meet Dr. Green.
Hey, Dr., how you been?
I'm good, Casper. Thank you very much for joining us for a chat.
Thank you. You were on my program about 2 months ago, I believe, very briefly.
I was, and I enjoyed our conversation and time together.
Then you went off and became a hero. I mean, you did things that a lot of people wouldn't even think to do. You took, first of all, medical marijuana to people who needed it in places where they couldn't get it because of a disaster relief.
That was a most interesting time. Yes, just for the listeners, the background was that we've had some terrible earthquakes in Christchurch, our second largest city in New Zealand, and we were heading down past that way to lend support for a medical cannabis grower who was facing imprisonment, and we took the opportunity as we passed through Christchurch to hand out a pound of cannabis. We made up little baggies and advertised it quite widely amongst our community in Christchurch, and people came together and received their supplies. We had seen photographs from Christchurch of buildings that were falling down, and in one of those photographs there was a view of a grow room that had been exposed by the damage caused by the earthquake. And it just made it clear that there was a shortage of cannabis in that community at that time, at a time when, of course, stress relief is a major concern. There's nothing fun about living through an earthquake. So
no, and you're right. I can see governments around the world dropping in food and dropping in water and dropping in clean clothes for people to wear. But I'm not sure how many governments around the world would actually be dropping in pounds of marijuana for people to smoke.
Well, the reality is, Casper, they don't do that. And that's why our visit was both timely and welcomed. So we did get closed down. The police came by. They received a complaint about what we were doing. But by the time they arrived, most of what we had been given away. They didn't take any action against us. I think they recognized that we were doing something worthwhile, and they simply told us to close up and move on. So no arrest took place. But it was a moment that I was proud of, and I have to say that the look on people's faces were worth every bit of effort that we went to in order to take that down there. It was a wonderful experience. So, yeah, we've done some crazy things, but we do whatever it takes to get in the media, and because that's the only way we're going to gain public support for what it is that we're doing.
Well, there are people who have accused me of being a media whore, and that's not true. You can ask my pimp.
Yeah, I was about to say that, actually. Well, you know, you make a good point there, Dector, is that it really is all about just the media support. I mean, beyond that, it's almost worthless. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, media support is one of the most important angles to tackle in any kind of campaign for law change, because it does hold the sway over people. People have been brought up on the media, and whatever is on the media enters the public consciousness. And if you want to talk about consciousness, how about talking about the hundreds, thousands of people or whatever that get arrested for cannabis every day?
Well, that's a myth. Okay. That's a myth. The United States government says that that's not being arrested, that it's just cleaning the streets of crime and cleaning the streets of a drug problem. Whole different thing.
So, you know, it's like a nice soft kill eugenics campaign on the streets using cannabis as the pretext. Isn't that nice?
We don't like to call them euphemisms. We like to refer to them as newly defined phrases.
We like to call it euthanasia.
I support euthanasia. I send money over there every now and then.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They do need our support, especially the youth in Japan. But, you know, it's just like, when we think about cannabis law reform, I think about the last 30 years and think about, like, well, how it seems to me that pretty much nothing's been accomplished.
Well, I don't know. I'm getting excited now from the reports of the most recent global conference that was held at the UN pertaining to the war on drugs. And then here in the States, one of our states, Washington, has got a ballot measure that they're putting forward that seems to have a lot of support from people in its own legislative body, which is unusual in our states. So, and there are different states that are also recognizing the amount of money that can be generated in the tax and coffers for their own budgets. And I'm thinking money is going to talk eventually, because the price of oil keeps going up and up and up. And so that means so is incarceration. And I think Peter Crist from Leap said it well when he said that prohibition is a luxury item. Soon there's going to be a time when our judges just can't afford to sit and listen to all these people who got arrested for smoking pot. And our jails just aren't going to hold of those people. And as our president has said, we cannot arrest our way out of the drug war. It's true. You can't. You got to get rational and put forth new measures. I saw on the internet today that Congressman Barney Frank and Congressman Ron Paul are on Thursday of this week here in the United States are going to introduce new legislation that might also help bring that forward. So there are some positive things on the front, and we have made a lot of changes. What frustrates me, and I'm going to say it straightforward, and if I offend people, I don't care, is the stupidity of John Q. Public. I'm really fed up with having to educate every new generation that spits out of a high school that you can take this plant and create 50,000 different products, paper, fiber, fuel, and medication. I want to throw up in my mouth every time I hear somebody say, oh, no, man, really? You can make oil out of that? No. It's like, come on, you should be able to say when the sun's up, you know, it's daylight. I mean, that should be such common knowledge at this point.
Exactly. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guests are Casper Leach from Time for Hemp and Dr. Green from thedactory.org. That's dactory.org.nz. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota.
Welcome back, ladies. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the cannabis theme song. I grow everywhere. That's how it goes. We're having a bit of technical difficulties in here trying to get up our guest, Bob Melamed. We're just trying to call him up. Here he is. Bob, welcome to the program. Give me one second here for you. I'm great, man. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let me preface this conversation we're about to have here for the next hour plus. We've got Dr. Green, who's a cannabis activist that's on the cutting edge of cannabis activism here in New Zealand, who's created a cannabis activist facility called The Dactory. You can see that at thedactory.org. We have Casper Leach, a veteran talk show host right here on American Freedom Radio. His show is, 5 days a week, Time for Hemp.
Hi.
So we bring his perspective as well. And now we're also joined by none other than the fabulous Bob Melamed, who, in fact, tours universities and such, talking about all the different elements of cannabis, and even as it pertains to our very evolution and how the discovery of endocannabinoids, or in other words, cannabinoids from within, active ingredient kind of in cannabis, regulate every single part and function of your entire body. So we're going to have a conversation with these three people here, and the subject, obviously, is cannabis law reform. So, Bob, firstly, I'd like you to just preface yourself and say hello to the listeners, and then we'll continue on.
Yeah, hi, everyone. I only have about a half hour or so because I got to get cook dinner for my little boys here.
Okay. All right, in that case, I hope we don't steal the stage then. In that case, postulate away because one thing that we've approached here on the subject is how when people get that sudden strike of compassion, once they realize what the drug laws actually do to people, then they will change their views on it, but not before that. What do you think?
Well, I think that that's true for some people, but not for all. You know, again, as part of the everything that cannabinoids regulate, they regulate open-mindedness. And the way they do that is because if you have to learn something new, you've got to be able to replace old wrong information with new, better information. That's essentially what open-mindedness is, right? You're exposed to something new, you look at it, and you see if it makes sense, and then you embrace it. And you embrace it by replacing the old information with the new, which really, if you think about it, is a form of forgetting. So cannabis is very much involved with, our cannabinoid system, I should say, is very much involved with how we learn and how we remember. And like everything else in life, there's a balance that has to occur between remembering and forgetting. If you can't remember anything, you're an idiot. And if you remember all the wrong things, then you have, you know, PTSD and trauma and everything else. So, you know, we need the appropriate balance. And our cannabinoid system is the setter of the thermostat.
Do you suppose that's why people often turn to cannabis after times of traumatic experiences?
Well, whenever you have any kind of stress, and stress in its simplest form simply means change. Any change is stressing the status quo. And that can occur at a subcellular biochemical level, or it can echo through the organization of our lives and manifest itself in the more conventional, you know, oh, I'm stressed. But it's still all a kind of like a fractal of the same underlying phenomena. And the way our bodies respond to stress is with our endocannabinoid system. It helps us, you know, balance out the negative consequences of stress. So cannabis use is the natural thing for someone who's suffering from any kind of excessive stress.
Well, and I would act under the assumption this is why it winds up being used in every situation, including live on air, because it can be quite stressful.
I did hear a lighter go off. Then.
Isn't that right, Doctor?
That was me, Casper Leach. It's always Time for Hemp, and I wanted to say, Bob, at Rock, meeting you up in Toronto.
Oh my goodness, sin on the air.
I'm medicating. As far as Casper's concerned, there is never not a time for hemp, except for between the time when he closes his eyes and wakes up in the morning. Right, Casper?
Absolutely. I've had people say to me, don't you ever put that pipe down? And it's like, well, when I finally fall asleep, yeah.
But even then, you know, your endocannabinoid system is very much involved with your sleep. Some of these related fat molecules that are part of this whole cosmic swirl of cannabinoid, endocannabinoid activity are very fundamental to how we go to sleep.
Well, that might explain why I do get a lot of good rest. I must say I'm a very stress-free guy. I'm blessed in that aspect. And I know that there are times when people say to me, I should be pretty uptight and stressed out. And
go ahead, Jacka.
Well, you know, those higher cannabinoids.
Hold on, Bob. Dexter, yeah. You wanted to say something?
I just wanted to say I'm sleeping right now, in fact.
Wow, that says a lot for the show.
Well, life is but a dream, remember?
Hello, hello again. I'm hoping to meet again.
No, it's so amazing how this stuff has such amazing central activity, you know, central to all of us on all levels. And, you know, how we have to battle, make it lower, how we have to battle the cannabinoid defective people who, you know, want to dominate our being because they're so sure of their righteousness.
Do you think it's because they're defective in their endocannabinoid production, so therefore their bodies aren't regulated properly, so they're unable to evolve?
Well, yeah, their brains are not working correctly if they don't have enough, because then they're stuck in, you know, rigidity, and that doesn't let them move on. Well, I don't know if you guys have heard, but I have this whole thing they call blips and flips, backward-looking people and forward-looking people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And yeah, that's the only way I can understand the drug war.
Say at Ball State, in my hometown, the university, they call that anal retentiveness for some of those people.
Yes, you know, it has a lot to do with that and, you know, similar, you know, concepts that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. It all has to do with the same thing, whether or not we're robust enough in our cannabinoid activity to be in tune with the basic process of our lives, which is to experience newness and to incorporate that into our being. So we have the primitive people who are the backward-looking cannabis-deficient people, who tend to rule the world out of their fear, paranoia, and aggressiveness versus, you know, the on the other extreme, let's say, you know, people like us. Happy, horny, and stoned.
Oh, man, it's like I got a twin. Say that again. I found my brother.
You know, these are the basic processes of life. I mean, geez, what more could you want? You know, you eat so that you can have energy, so you can run around and have fun and reproduce. And that's all part of the process as you go through life and learn more and share and, you know, embrace the joy of being.
And Cher does embrace the joy of being. I've seen her perform 4 or 5 times.
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing I find about cannabis use is that it's very rarely exclusively a one person by themselves doing it. If there's one thing I know about weed, it brings people together.
Well, you know, it's fundamentally different from other drugs. Other drugs that because cannabis shouldn't even be called a drug. It's really simply a necessary nutrient, an essential nutrient.
It's an
this
herb.
This whole drug label is bullshit, you know?
It's an herb.
Well, I'm not allowed to say that, right?
No, you're
it's
not.
An herb.
I'm sorry. I take it back.
No, it's an herb.
What you've got to do is say the initials BS, which incidentally are the initials of the current U.S. President Barry Satoro. Anyway, continue on.
Well, and to jump in there, this might be the direction you're going, but anytime I've seen two people either sober or drinking liquor have a dispute about who sang what song or who won what game or whose kid is better or whatever, it escalates into a shouting match or maybe even worse. But when I see two people sit down and try to figure out point A from point B and they fire up a joint, they work together and they enjoy finding the solution as a team. It's amazing.
Even if it takes a little bit longer. But go ahead, Bob.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they have more fun. That just gives them more time to enjoy their existence.
Yeah.
You know what? I think. Go ahead, Dexter.
It's a time to enjoy the journey. We all start with a joint and set off for our journey through the day. It is, it's just part of life.
Well, and, you know, and our journeys are always going to have ups and downs. And if you focus on the downs and build your world around your fear and paranoia of their existence, instead of embracing them and moving on to the next down, you know, then you become a, you know, conservative, Republican, backward-looking person who's willing to put people in jail for using a life-extending plant that's found in mother's milk and cures cancer. I mean, how brain dead could you possibly be?
That's right, people. Stop getting yourself down and start getting yourself high. You're listening to the Vinegar Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, go and roll up a joint and smoke it in the bathroom during the break.com. And we'll be right back after this very fabulous messages from our sponsors, Juicy J's flavored papers from Amsterdam. We'll be right back. Freedom Radio.
Press play to resume.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're having a, I guess this show could be called a spliff with many different cannabis activists. we've got Bob Malavine, who's a professor of sorts, basically just an old hippie who occasionally dresses in a tweed suit to give presentations and pretends to be somebody of an intellectual type, but really is just crazy. And we have Casper Leach, who's very talented and likes to look on the lighter side of everything and interject jokes every now and again. And Dr. Green, who has a deep booming voice, that likes of which he has also done some voice work for The Lord of the Rings as the voice of Sauron. And right here in New Zealand.
I wish.
Yes. Can you, Dector, can you just say this phrase for me? You cannot hide, Frodo. I can see you.
No, not without the same sort of pain that the real guy got.
But speaking of the eye of the Dark Lord, we were speaking before about how you ran a mission down to the quake-stricken Christchurch to deliver a pound of essential supplies to the local population, and how you said that will basically never happen anywhere on Earth. And at that time, the first thing that came to my mind was, I hope there's an earthquake in Amsterdam.
Well, of course, an earthquake in Amsterdam wouldn't be noticed by the population, so that's probably a good place to have an earthquake.
Yeah, man.
Everybody'd be so chilled out, they'd say, well, what was that little bump?
Yeah.
Christchurch, on the other hand, had real need, so we were delighted to be able to take some medicine to them.
Absolutely, and it's disaster relief for all those growers who lost their grows in the quake. You know, let's not forget the victims here, the real victims.
The real victims are anybody that has anything to do with police over the question of cannabis. They are the real victims.
Absolutely. And they should be, they should get restitution when this thing ends.
Last year we gave our government an opportunity,
said to our government, if you change the law now, instead of in the future, change the law now and we promise we won't sue you.
Mm-hmm.
If they continue with this nonsense, there will come a time where the law will change. There's no question that it will change.
Exactly.
But the longer it takes, the more likely it is that governments will be facing compensation claims. So,
yeah, they'll weasel out of it, you know. I mean, they're such Nazis. But even the Nazis got it in the end, and there were compensation claims, weren't there?
No, the Nazis didn't get it in the end. They got exported to America under Operation Paperclip and became the heads of NASA, the CIA, and the UN.
There's an element of truth to that, isn't there?
Oh, now stop it! You're gonna cause our tourist trade to increase, and we don't have room for that many more visitors.
Fascists like fascists.
Thank you.
Oh yeah,
they can get into office here. They know that.
You know, speaking of office and people and the victims, you know, one of the kindest, nicest people I know, a very dear friend, Billy Greer, he's been in jail now for 18 years for 54 tons of hashish. And while he was in jail, when I was in Vermont, we started a Vermont Grassroots Party, a political party, and we ran Billy for U.S. Senate while he was in jail for pot.
Did he win?
He didn't win, no, but nevertheless, we had him out there. Yeah, we had a great time. I ran for U.S. Senate twice and Congress once. You know, we were in their faces all the time.
Well, you know, and this goes back to what Dector mentioned earlier in the program, that when you go out in the terms of cannabis law reform, the thing that you really need to do is just capture the attention of the media, because they love stunts and things of that nature, something that's sensational in order to get their attention. To do something logical and preemptive and scholarly, they don't care.
Well, they twist it, you know. I can't tell you how many interviews I've had. You say one thing, and then you read what they say, and geez, you know, it's what's wrong with these people?
It goes to the point where you see that there really is a deliberate editorial control of the facts about cannabis, and a lot of major news media, particular slants, are always taken. And there was one particular example that happened at the Daiquiri down here, where a crew from the Close Up Television New Zealand program came in and spent the weekend with them, drove to Waitangi and all of that kind of stuff, and then they resolved to do a hit piece on them.
Well, along those lines, I'll give you something that's really bothered me to no end over the past few days. So, you know, as CEO of Cannabis Science, what we're trying to do is ultimately go through the FDA and in general make it so that people anywhere can get more cannabis for their health. And there's a professional society called the International Cannabinoid Research Society. And they're having a conference outside of Chicago starting July 5th to July 10th, where scientists from all over the world who are involved in cannabinoid research are getting together. Now, you have to realize that the bulk of all the research that's done is done either in tissue culture or in animal studies because of, you know, it would be too horrendous to dare give anybody any cannabis. And as a matter of fact, the Dr. Volko, the head of the National Institute of Drug Abuse, has come out and said that we'll never fund or allow any studies that show that are aimed to show anything good about marijuana, only bad, because we're the National Institute of Drug Abuse. Anyway, I said, you know, being in Colorado, where we have a very very reasonable policy in that at least people are getting their medicine. You know, the fascists, the regulating obsessed lunatics keep screwing things down more and more so patients keep paying more and more, but at least you have a functional situation that's better than anywhere else. So what we are able to do here, and it's taken me a while to be able to say what I'm about to say, but, you know, the Rick Simpson treatment of cannabis extracts, it does cure cancers. And I now have medical documentation for a number of cancers, including prostate cancer, glioma, multiple myeloma, esophageal cancer, where I've seen the documentation. In some cases, I actually have it, medical documentation, skin cancer as well. So what I wanted to do is present this as a poster session at this conference. You'd think it would be a big deal, right? Here these guys are playing with their test tubes, and here we can actually see the implementation in humans and correlated with their studies.
Exactly.
Well, they denied
this would be,
my poster.
They and this would be poster and they said, denied it. Oh, for heaven's sake.
And they said it wasn't properly formatted and up to their standards. And if that's not enough, I then was speaking with a friend of mine who I worked with for 30 years, who's, you know, a very successful conventional scientist. And I told her about these cancer cures. You know, I used to be a member of the Vermont Cancer Center when I was at the University of Vermont. And I'm going back to Vermont for a couple of weeks. My daughter lives there with my granddaughter, my son-in-law, and my other kid is coming up. Or, you know, all my children are gathering there, and my ex-wife, and et cetera. In any event, I told her about this, this cancer story. She won't let me give a seminar at the university. It's too controversial.
Wow.
It's controversial.
In this century.
It would contaminate her image, her self-image, to actually have me speak there. So I went on to the Vermont Cancer Site website, and I pulled out the email addresses of all of the people I know and my friends, and I sent them out a letter saying that I'm going to be in town, and I attached to it a couple of the documents showing a cancer cure for prostate. A man who emailed me how his daughter's glioma is now gone and things along those lines. And I said, I'll be in town and I'd be happy to meet with any of you or give a presentation. So now I'm waiting to see if I get any kind of responses from that. It's amazing. These people stick their heads way up their butts and then they wonder why it's so dark.
Well, look at it this way. If it's not controversial to have strippers and starlets and singers of that nature on the television while children are watching it, but it is controversial to allow somebody to inform people that cannabis extract can kill and does kill cancers, that's controversial?
I know, isn't it? It's sick that it's unimaginable.
I can understand it to come out and say that we can cure cancer. My God, I don't want any association with that. I want to make sure that we continue to have cancer so that we can have medical needs for our pharmaceuticals so that my stock will go up. Stop it, you people. You're scaring me.
Well, you know, just bear in mind, you'd be cutting into a lot of doctors' commissions.
It's the money that I'm getting at.
You'd be cutting into a lot of doctors' commissions. It's recently come out, and this has been reported by Health Freedom New Zealand spokesperson Nicola Grace, that medical doctors in New Zealand who prescribe chemotherapy get huge commissions.
Yeah, they get kickbacks.
But if they prescribe medications that work and do kill the cancer, they get nothing. They get up to $140,000 a year in official kickbacks from the pharmaceutical companies themselves for prescribing medications in New Zealand.
My point.
You know, and we allow this to happen through our ignorance and through our fear of speaking out.
We have a big problem here, gentlemen, don't we?
A very serious problem.
And it occurs to me that this problem is not just cannabis. There is an entire system by which cannabis prohibition is facilitated that affects many, many other areas of society. It hooks into the medical industry, the financial industry, the intelligence agencies, for example, are well known for doing an awful lot of drug trafficking. And the whole legislation process of prohibition coming into the fold in the first place was a big raw con in the first place because nobody knew what marijuana was. They all knew what hemp was because it grew in their backyards. I mean, you know, if it's all corrupt, then how much damage can we truly do with just straight honesty and communication in the media and the airwaves?
Well, you know what I'm seeing, and I think that this is the answer to your question. Certain illnesses, in particular cancer, hit so many people, and it's such a horrendous illness, especially when being treated with toxic drugs and butchery, that people, it has a huge impact on people's lives. And those of us who are able to learn new things and adapt are going to embrace this reality, because it's true. I mean, I've got over 700 peer-reviewed scientific articles that show, for the most part, cannabis killing cancers in animals and in tissue cultures. So why would it be such a big jump to have that scientific base in agreement with what the people are finding? And it's going to spread. That truth is going to spread. And we have revolutions in, you've seen the fall of the Soviet Union. You see Arab Spring. Well, there's going to be the cannabis revolution in America and globally when people realize that they don't have to be as sick as they are for literally the bulk of the illnesses that are making them sick.
They're but you know what?
It's cannabis first.
What I might be afraid of is that people will use heaps of cannabis and then go get heaps of fast food and get their illnesses all back over again.
You know, even that, the latest study that I've seen shows that marijuana smokers are actually thinner than non-consumers. And the reason is that how it promotes a healthier body. It's all part of that. So even when you're eating the junk food, at least the cannabis is helping you. And presumably, the more intelligent you become and more open-minded you become through its use, the less junk food you're going to be eating.
Are you seriously saying that there is a link between higher intelligence and cannabis use?
Consciousness is what I mean by higher intelligence, yes. There's a study that even shows, for example, that moderate use increases the IQ, whereas really heavy use decreases it.
That explains why I used to be so smart, but now I'm not, huh?
but the wow. Effects are, but the effects are temporary and the negative, aren't they?
Well, you know, it depends on what you're looking at. I mean,
If you're using heavily for, say, like 5 years or something like that, and then you come out of it, would there be a recovery phase, or would it be permanent damage to your intelligence?
Well, see, that's what I mean by who's to define exactly what intelligence is, you know? They constantly refer to how it impairs executive function, you know? Well, thinking differently is not always mean it's worse. It means it's different, and there are pros and cons to how you think when you're stoned, and there are pros and cons to how you think when you're not stoned. You know, so why we have this artificial value of, you know, quote, being not high and being normal, it's all bull.
Well, somebody can be laced up on as much as 7 or 8 pharmaceuticals at the same time as some elderly people are these days, and then look at and be driving. And look at somebody who's smoking a joint and go, he's high.
Well, you know, that brings up another absurdity. Oh, everything with cannabis is always backwards and stupid, you know, because it's made by unhigh, stupid people. But like the driving issue, they monitor not THC, but THC acid in your urine, for example. Now, THC acid is a metabolite of THC, but it so happens that THC acid actually inhibits you from being high, which is why, you know, when you smoke all the time, you tend to not get so stoned anymore, unless you stop for a few days or switch strains where you're going to get some other variation of what's going on. So think of the absurdity. They measure your impairment by measuring something that unimpairs you. I mean, how stupid can you be?
Well, now I've got
about as stupid as our politicians and lawmakers, apparently. Bob, thank you very much for joining us. I know you've got to go make your kids tea.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're going to make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time.
It's business time. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the deeply sexual Vinny Eastwood show on American.
Vinny, forget that I know you.
Yeah.
And that is what I
expect. And incidentally, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and frickin' stupidity, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go frickin' nuts. Welcome back to my very special guests, Casper Leach and Dr. Green. People keep asking, what is the daiquiri? And the local nickname for pot in New Zealand is Dak, and Dr. Green came up with the name Dakta while he was in prison, as far as I know, and they hired a factory, filled it full of DAC, and renamed it the Daiquiri. It's basically as close as I can come to call it.
That's exactly what it is, Vinny. I actually came up with the name Dakta before I went to jail back in 02, but it was whilst I was in jail and talking with another cannabis growers that were in jail at that time, we determined that it was time that we had our own premises, our own club. And it's 3 years to the day of my sentence end date. We opened the Daiquiri in Auckland. So it is a unique place. It is unique anywhere in the world. And it's still open. We're still carrying on with our primary objective, which is law reform, but we don't sell any cannabis from there any longer. We did for 2.5 years. It was actually in the nature of a social experiment that we could operate there as our attempt at regulating an illegal market. We maintained an R18 policy. If you looked under 25, you are required to produce ID, and we didn't have any troubles. And this is, of course, going to confound the prohibitionist. How can people in the cannabis culture actually lead a normal and productive life? Well, you only need to look at what we have been doing in the daiquiri. But, you know, we don't have to try and convince each other. It's the wider population, the wider public that needs to understand that they've been lied to for many years. Prohibition only exists because there is a lack of education. Prohibition exists because of the brainwashing that we grow up with. I mean, I was a prohibitionist for my first 40 years of life, and I didn't know why. It was just something that was evil, brain damage, all the normal things. We believe it. We believe it because we're told that, and unless there's any contrary information at that time, then we take that information on board, and it takes two or three or even more people to tell you that what you previously thought was true is in fact a lie. So we need to engage the public more and show them that we are just normal human beings. We are your neighbors, we are your family, we are your friends. And we're part of a very large movement around the world, and I think we're having an effect.
I hope so. That kind of goes back to what I was saying when I first joined the conversation, is my frustration with the ignorance of John Q. Public and Jane Q. Public. I still can't figure out how it is so many people are blind to the fact that you can produce so many products, you can create so many jobs, you can stop poisoning the planet. I mean, there is so much to this that should just be osmosis when it comes to absorbing. It's like absorbing knowledge, you know, something you should know at birth almost at this point. I'm thinking this information has been around since the crack of dawn.
You know, you're quite right. And I find that the best thing to be dealing with now is to be asking members of parliament, why do they think that people should be locked in jail? And, you know, the only answer I've ever had from a politician is because you break the law. And the more people that tell us that the only reason we're going to jail is because we've broken the law, the better for our movement. If they can't come up with sound, common sense, scientific reasons of why cannabis is so dangerous, so evil, then the prohibitionists will actually defeat their case without any input from us.
That's true.
It's about justifying old traditional law that's been there for many, many years.
Somebody who just committed the murder, you know, why is he going to jail? You can say, because that person's dead because of what he or she did, or any other aspect of law. But when it comes to smoking marijuana, and you ask, why is that person going to jail? He says, well, he touched that plant. My God.
I think the stress test is whether or not you know that person who might be getting arrested or going to jail for it. And a question I like to ask people is, do you know anybody who has ever smoked cannabis? And pretty much everybody will put their hand up. Then you ask them again, would you like to see any of those people go to jail? All right? That's the juxtaposition when you come up to it. Everybody knows somebody, and nobody wants them to go to jail. And that, I think, in a nutshell, sums up the dilemma of prohibitionists, is that they are... And there's always one person in that crowd, however, who goes, yeah, we should arrest you. And you say to that person, well, you know what, sir? You've actually just proven the point that there's a room full of people who won't say anything and only one person yelling out what he thinks and everyone just passively accepting it.
Wow. Go for it.
Yeah, for most people, cannabis is not part of their lives. For most people, it may have been part of their lives in the past, but they really don't have a great deal of interest in it. It's not the sort of thing that touches on all the emotions. We don't know somebody that's being sent to jail on a daily basis. And so it's a very difficult argument to be out there. When you have the power of the state, you know, I always thought that the prohibitionists actually have the advantage, the upper hand, because the law is as it is at the moment. And for us to overcome that current law situation puts us automatically into the realm of being different from the mainstream. The law is the law is the law is good enough for most people. And if you want to change this law, you don't do it by breaking the law. Well, I point out to those people that if I could see a large number of people that have never smoked cannabis that would be out there actively campaigning for law change, then I'd sit back and leave them to it. The reality is, it's the way people are affected in their personal lives. I'm part of the cannabis culture, and therefore I'm targeted by this evil law. So we need to encourage people that know very little about cannabis to actually take the time to consider the facts and try and make it personal for them. We do that all the time.
Everybody knows somebody who's done it. Okay, that's whether or not they know they've done it or not. Because, you know, a lot of parents don't recognize the fact, and it's because it becomes such a secretive
here, right?
Yeah. It talks about secretive activities and whatnot, and it comes down to the whole thing that when you're doing something that's illegal, you'll usually only want to associate with other people that do it as well. And that's what a lot of people realize when they're heavy cannabis users, is that most of their friends will also be cannabis users. And they'll rarely be friends with people who don't use it. kind of makes a selection. And on in the Netherlands, I believe, when they changed their cannabis laws to sort of semi-allow coffee shops and whatnot, they found that the usage rate of cannabis for the area went down significantly. And they were asked why they would have stopped smoking cannabis when they didn't have to be criminalized for it anymore. And they said, well, my social circles changed. I didn't have any reason to hang around with a lot of the people that I was normally smoking with.
Yeah.
That's another thing that really boggles my mind, is that it becomes this sort of social vacuum of criminality. And that's the image of the cannabis law reform movement, as John Q. Public sees it, as a bunch of criminals just getting together. And that's the view of the prosecution in your case, Doctor, to take my view, is that they just see you as some description of gangster, criminal, or whatever, trying to get away with a whole bunch of evil and doing damage and being a menace to the community. And that's basically all they're willing to say. That's all they're willing to look into. And they don't care about any facts, any evidence, or anything of any kind other than that narrow, short-sighted, and wrong 180-degree direction, kind of wrong, view. Why, under any circumstances, is the public capable of accepting this? It's because they don't know about it. We don't have any credible media in this country, you know, or virtually any other, for that matter. And when I say credible media, I mean there's heaps of credible sources, absolutely. But they're not broadcast to the extent, say, a mainstream media news channel would be broadcast, so that it massively gets out there at the same time. Those kind of things have a ripple effect in the consciousness of the community. In America, for example, anybody who travels from, say, New Zealand or Australia or whatever to America and watches the television commercials and the television shows that are there, they are not funny. They are not clever. They are really, really dumb, slow, oversold, very tacky by comparison to what we've got here in our countries. And that's what brainwashing has really produced for our society, I believe, is a bunch of mindless, tacky thinkers who think that a single lie that they've had repeated to them over and over again for the extent of their life justifies treating another human being like garbage.
Hmm. You raise a good point, Vinny. That's why we're out campaigning.
How can we relate to them, though? I mean, if that's their standpoint, how do you convert someone from that mindset to a mindset that is more akin to reality?
The important thing is that we talk to the members of Parliament and ask them to lead. They cannot be controlled by the mindless, uneducated masses that have been brainwashed by the media based on the fact that it's illegal, and they keep perpetuating that myth so that there's something wrong with it.
Don't you think, therefore, and this is something that's been egging on my mind just over the last couple of days, that every time any of these mainstream media people come up to you, shouldn't you be hostile to them? Shouldn't you accuse them of covering up the truth? Shouldn't you tell them that they're sellouts and that they're brainwashing the public and they're not allowing the truth about cannabis law reform, that they play a part in the responsibility of the incarceration of hundreds of their countrymen?
Who, me?
Oh, either of you.
Oh, well, I wasn't sure if you'd bring that question to me, Vinny, because I know Dank has been talking. Well, I know every time I try to bring that to the attention of the public around me, I start getting painted with the same paintbrush as conspiracy theorists and the 911s and everybody. That's why I've always stayed focused on medical marijuana, paper, fiber, fuels, and medications. Because when I start talking about conspiracies and everybody's trying to keep this from happening, that's not sounding a little wacky. So our government's not smart enough to do anything as a collective group. So I just lay it back on the population and say, since you know the truth and you've learned the truth, to hell with what 350 people say in Congress and the Senate. Get up off your asses and go vote somebody into office who's going to make a change. Okay, now I feel better. Go ahead.
And what do you think, Dector, about the approach to mainstream media?
I dropped out briefly then, Benice. I missed a couple of minutes of your last conversation. But mainstream media, look, mainstream media are aimed at the lowest common denominator. It's all about attracting an audience to watch the commercials. And I have to say that the
Oh, we've lost you there, Dector. Don't worry, we're going to break. We'll have these technical difficulties sorted out. On the other side, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, a little panel discussion that we're having here with Dector Green from the Dactory, and Time for Hemp's Casper Leach right here on American Freedom Radio. And we'll be right back after the break.
All right, now...
Actually, ladies and gentlemen, for F's sake, don't trust in me, whatever you do. Trust in yourself, you know, because you're the only person who can be held accountable that way. And all of you who are listeners to the show regularly and hang on every word, I can assure you, you'll be held accountable someday as well. My very special guests are the host of Time for Hemp, Casper Leach, and Dr. Green, coming at us live from a hotel room, because he's living in exile right now in the Siberia of West Auckland, because part of his bail conditions is that he can't go back to the Dactory, which has been his home for the last couple of years. Isn't that right, Dector?
Yeah, that's right. But hopefully, Benny, after I'm sentenced next week, that there will be no imprisonment involved and I'll be allowed to return home. So... I have the fingers crossed, and I hope that's the way it's going to come out.
What's the percentage chance of it going your way? Do you know, any idea? What do the lawyers say?
Well, I don't have a lawyer. I'm self-represented. But I've just 10 minutes before we went on air today, I received a copy of the probation service report, and it's not recommending incarceration. So... I hope that the judge will take that on board and impose some other non-custodial penalty.
Yeah, it's a plethora of charges. I mean, when I was young, I was arrested for possession for supply, and I was also charged with selling and a whole raft of other things. Fortunately, the police had not advised me of my rights when they took my statement and all of that kind of stuff, so it was all inadmissible. But I was still up for the possession charges, and that was I was up for a mandatory up to 8 years imprisonment straight off. But like you, Dector, they didn't push for imprisonment, so I wound up with 300 hours community service instead. The person in front of me who was up for assault, sexual assault, evading the police, growing cannabis plants, and selling cannabis, got 150 hours community service.
Yeah, that's because you're ugly, Bernie. Authorities like to send ugly people to jail, so I'm safe. I'm not going to jail.
Oh, it's just... when a system appears mad, that's because it is, okay? That's why they call it the criminal justice system, because it's just criminal. The whole thing is just a massive waste of time and people's lives. It chews you up and spits you out and takes all your available money, and any possible time you might have to relax is taken up and fulfilled with immense amounts of pressure, sorrowful sadness, and absolute copious quantities of stress that would threaten to drive even the most homely and happy of people into ravenous psychopaths. That's the legal system in a nutshell for me. And as far as I'm concerned, it's because the laws are based on lies, and so therefore every single method of enforcing those laws has to be a fraudulent system to start off with. Otherwise, the whole system wouldn't work.
Wow. You're very eloquent at the end of your show, Vinny.
Yep. I might be sobering up.
Oh, okay.
I was just joking.
See, that's why I never really get too bothered about the idea of getting arrested for smoking pot. It's because, like, I'm too high to go out.
It's a badge of honor, Casper. It's a badge of honor for us here when people walk out of court. One of our people walk out of court either with a conviction or walk free. We all applaud. It's the way we change things. The people that are campaigning, that are standing up for their rights, we have to support them. And I'm expecting a great deal of support next week. There could be some hundreds of people outside our court as I'm sentenced next Wednesday. So I think that's important. It's important that the public see that there is widespread support for people that are being charged with cannabis offences.
That makes sense.
I think that there really is the ultimate. If every courtroom in the country, every day that a court is in session with somebody that's put in there on a cannabis charge, there's half a dozen people outside blowing air horns, waving banners. Every courthouse in the country.
We've been doing a lot of that lately. As you know, Vinny, and for the listeners, we have had our campaign vehicle, Mary Jane. She's a large 40-something seater bus. We've campaigned that all over the country, and it attracts attention and people listen. But we actually have three buses now. They're all set up for campaigning, and we're actually going out campaigning this afternoon. So to be able to take our vehicle, we call them tanks. It is a drug war. Our tanks don't fire bullets or weaponry, but we do wave a lot of joints around. So our buses are out there creating debate within the community, and we just have to keep doing more of the same. And we will have a breakthrough because prohibition laws don't work. We know that. And it's soon to be over.
I was going to say that you actually have, in the, 2.5-3 years that the Dactory has been running, obtained more media attention than all of the previous cannabis law reform movements in this country's history combined.
Maybe.
Or at the very least, look, getting close to it. Certainly more than I've ever seen on any particular one entity, issue, or person in the cannabis law reform movement. Nobody's received this much positive press or this much press attention at all. And I think it is primarily because you are very media aware. After all, you're a veteran campaigner and you know how to speak to the media and things of that nature. You're very eloquent. And, of course, you do pull off great big stunts, and the police don't seem to want to get involved. So there's that element of interest and intrigue that I believe has really lured the media in. And it's quite a masterful job, really. The difficulty becomes when you may have to suffer legal ramifications of doing the right thing and getting attention for the right cause.
Yeah, the difficulty anybody has in campaigning for a law change is the fact that we are subject to that law So if we're out campaigning for a change to cannabis laws, we are subject to arrest. And mostly the police leave us alone because we are too much trouble. We've actually had, you know, senior commanders, district commanders that have told media, yes, we didn't arrest them because all they want is media coverage. And we think, well, thank you very much because we're now in the media by you not arresting us. So every opportunity we have to promote our cause in the media, we take advantage of. But more importantly, when we're out talking to the public, we will win this fight by winning minds and souls one at a time. And is it changing? Of course it's changing. When we get reports like the UN Committee on the Drugs War recommending that cannabis be legalized and other drugs be regulated, you know, we are making giant strides. And our little members of parliament with their own small agendas, eventually they will have to see that there is no rhyme nor reason to continue locking people in jail and that there are other ways of dealing with whatever the issues are.
Indeed. And I think that's close enough now to wrapping up. What does the future hold for you, Doctor?
I'm hopeful that next Wednesday the judge will impose a non-custodial sentence that will allow me to return to the Daiquiri next Wednesday night and have a major celebration, of course. And the following day we'll be back on the road campaigning for law change, taking advantage of the media coverage that we'll be receiving next week. So it's cannabis law reform is going to be on the political agenda this year. It is election year, and we will be making sure that we take full advantage of that.
Okay. And Casper, any final words for yourself?
Well, it's been a lot of fun to be in the program with both of you, and I look forward to having each of you on as a guest on Time for Hemp real soon. So it's fun sharing the platform and opening brains and sharing ideas. This has been really enjoyable. Thank you for having me on the program.
Well, you know, like I always say, man, you get two intelligent people into a room, you can just listen to their conversation and you feel like by the end of it, you're a little smarter. I say, why not get two, three, four intelligent people in the room and just, you know, chips fall where they may. You may wind up not being the same person when you come out the other end, but you may be the wiser, for better or for worse. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Thank you very much for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll catch you some other time. You can check out the archives of this show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll be right back tomorrow.